extra time is exactly how I find out what's going on in the MLS.
Get lost. Get lost.
Maybe this podcast has influenced me a little bit as well.
Everybody up here, every single day, goes into the office, into the laboratory, to try to cook up some great stuff for you guys.
That's why he's here.
From New York, New York, you are listening to Extra Time, presented by AT&T 5G. I am Andrew Weeby with my partners in soccer, Kalen Carr, David Goss, Matt Doyle. He's got the timer running, folks. He doesn't want this to be a long show. He wants to take content away from you. The lineups are out for Australia, Peru. That's why FIFA World Cup qualification on the line. But Doyle, speak for yourself here, man. You said 45-minute show. I know the powers that be, at least the people listening, I don't think they want that.
So we have stats on this. At what point do our listeners turn
never,
the show off?
Never.
Literally never.
I think around 1:45, an hour and 43 minutes.
Kalen's right. Kalen's right.
From what I've seen.
They just re-listen to the show before. They just let it transition straight in.
Okay.
From ending to intro every time.
They don't definitely turn it off within the first 5 minutes for some reason.
No.
Never.
No. And certainly not this time. They won't hear this intro and be like, oh God, can't deal. Not for me.
Just hitting that 30-second skip button, man.
Is this an ad? What is this? Like, what kind of read is this? Coming up today from the AT&T 5G virtual studios, Ronnie Dyla is leaving New York City FC for Standard Liège, who haven't won a title since Oguchi Onyewu played for him. I don't know if that's true, but I think it actually might be true. Giorgio Chiellini is doing the hat reveal for LAFC. He's dreamed about it his whole career, and now it's here for him. We'll talk about that now that it's official. There were three games over the weekend. Charlotte got the new manager bump. Nashville drew at home. Surprise, surprise. And the Revs came to Kansas City and won. Plus, we got some transfer news, and we promised the out-of-contract MLS matchmaker last show, and then we didn't do it. So that's what our promises are worth here, at least my promises, I guess. And then we will have a little bit of a narrative swirling around Jesus Ferreira in Canada after they smacked Curaçao. Look ahead to the games come up in the Nations League this week. And in the mailbag, Gaga Slonina's next career move. Just want a quick programming note here. We're still doing watch-alongs. We will do the watch-alongs all the way through the World Cup for the U.S. and Canada. Tonight, if you are downloading, you know, the moment it comes out, Canada-Honduras watch-along with Roger Espinoza. Should be really fun. I believe it's Kalen? Is it Kalen, you, Suze, David Goss, and Roger? So that should be a fun one. Fonzie is back. And then on Tuesday night,
got two names.
U.S. El Salvador in El Salvador.
I got elevated over Roger Espinosa.
I mentioned you twice?
No, you said first and last.
Well,
I got a full intro besides Kalen, Roger, and Suze, so I feel like...
You know where you stand in my life.
I'm huge.
I mean...
I am massive.
You're above Roger. That's saying a lot. If you're above Roger, that's a big deal here. Tuesday night, again, same thing, Twitch and YouTube, U.S. El Salvador in El Salvador. Rodney Wallace will join us to talk CONCACAF. I believe it's myself, Charlie, and Doyle on that one as well. We have a ton of fun doing them. Shalri Joseph was an absolute pleasure as a personality, as an analyst on the Grenada match. So tune into those. Get a second screen up and running. Let's dive in. But first, I have to ask you, David Goss, can we legally hold you responsible for any take uttered on this show? It seems like you might be recording in duress.
Why?
I just Planes, Trains, and Automobiles.
Yeah, man. It's been a long one. I jumped out of an airplane just to get here. So that's what I've been doing over the last 48 hours. I am Mr. Transit. But you know what? I got home and my friend from the Bay Area, I don't know if you guys have heard of it, was like, are you still going to work today? And I was like, yeah, I'll be fine. Because I took a red eye that was delayed 3.5 hours on an impromptu after jumping out of an airplane yesterday. And he was like, man.
Wait, just so it's clear, the jumping out of an airplane part is not a joke. You actually
did jump out of
yesterday.
An airplane, yeah.
Wait, what?
I went skydiving yesterday. Or I guess maybe 2 days ago. It may have been 2 days ago at this point. So within the last 36 hours.
MLS, this is what happens when you like MLS goes on a 2 week
international break. I just need the
international. David still needs the fear of imminent death.
I miss that thrill.
This feels like Houston, San Jose on a Friday night. Woo!
Vancouver's not playing at 10:30 p.m. Eastern time. What do I do with myself? I'm going to jump out of the highest
thing
plane. I can
find. Just toss me out. Toss me out.
Good stuff. I'm a New Yorker. I'm made tough. It's different out here. You guys wouldn't understand.
What kind of skydiver are you before we get into it? Are you like, you're screaming the whole way down, where they have to like shove you out of the plane, you know, white knuckling on the edges of the doors, you don't want to jump?
I would have been those things if they even gave me the chance. I was out that plane door before I could even think about what was going on. My guy Memo got me out fast, but I was definitely like, this is epic. I didn't scream. But then once they pull the chute, they're like, we can do whatever you want. What type of maneuvers? And I was like, I would like to be on the ground now. This was fun. I had fun. I don't need to stay up here any longer than necessary. Please go down.
We missed a good opportunity to have fan votes over like what kit would he wear when he skydives? And we could give him a GoPro. I feel like I do have
video of it. So. Yeah.
Content opportunities, you know, give us all of your USMNT take. Is Jesus Ferreira the 9 in Qatar? Please give us that take on the way down. Do the goals against Grenada even count? Like, is this a real
thing? I'll say this for Anders. My jump was fast, reliable, and something else by AT&T.
And secure.
And secure. It was all of those.
You could have done it live.
You wouldn't believe the 5G coverage.
Twitter spaces.
As you were falling from this plane down to Earth. It was incredible. All right. We had a producer in Anders' reminder of the day, but I'm going to save that because we've gone so far off the rails.
We're tracking long right now already.
I did this all for Doyle. Ronny Dyla officially departs as the manager of New York City FC. Very good run for Ronny and New York City FC. They've had a very good run over their last couple managers, and we've talked repeatedly, you know, of course, all through the playoff run to MLS Cup last year and this year during CCL and just every year, honestly. I mean, this has been sort of the standard in MLS for success, at least it was in the regular season until they got it done the postseason last year. But this is a little strange. They are arguably the best team in the league, and their manager is leaving. Doyle, is it strange? Does it make sense? Standard Liège, what kind of destination is that for Ronny Dyla? What comes next for NYCFC? Boil it down. What's the most interesting part about this news for you? Where did your mind go when you saw the headline?
Which question do you want me to answer? You
the last one.
The last one. The most interesting part of it is long-term Ronny Dyla is always going to be remembered as the coach who won NYCFC their first trophy, but his long-term impact was he did a better job than the guys who came before him at developing young players. James Sands, Tati Castellanos, we've seen what, you know, Tyus Magno has taken a jump this year. Keaton Parks was not a written in pen starter before Ronny Dyla. He took young players and he made them better. And for what this league is, and for what NYCFC clearly are, given the amount that they've invested in their homegrown pipeline, but especially given the amount that they're investing in guys like Tyus Magno and Gabby Pereira and Thiago Andrade, the next coach, whether it's the interim, whose name I'm suddenly blanking on or not.
Nick Cushing.
I was going to say Nick Downing, but yep. No, he's a former fringe MLSer. Nick Cushing, if he is going to get the job full time, he has to be really good at that. Being good at developing talent is more important for the NYCFC coach than being a good tactician. Like that, and I'm not sure that's the case in most places in MLS, but it definitely is in the Bronx. And that's like, that is the most interesting part about it to me. Do you want me to take a crack at those other three questions?
No, let's leave those open for everybody else. We got an hour and 45 here, Doyle, so you just buckle in, man. Just get ready.
I would say
you'll have all the time in the world.
Listen, the initial reaction is none of us are surprised. It's unfortunate the way the seasons line up that this couldn't happen in the offseason, right? Ideally, he wins MLS Cup. That's his crowning achievement. He's accomplished something. And then he goes to his next job and you sort of start anew. But because of the way the seasons line up, that's not going to happen. But if you remember at the beginning of his time or at some point during his managerial time with NYCFC and Domes, they both complained about the roster and the talent and the players available to them. That won't be the case now. Like, they are set up in the perfect spot to replace him, to continue to move forward, even I guess I can say when they lose Tati, they are still going to be set up to be successful. So I think that's the positive for the club, is as good as they were when Patrick Vieira left, remember the borderline teardown and then Dome's lack of success early and then his complaints about the players he had available to him. And Dyla did the same going into last season where he was saying, I don't have the roster that I need. I don't have players to fill every position, blah, blah, blah. That no one's going to be able to say that now. And I think that for NYCFC, you have to feel good about the stability of the club outside of now the manager as he leaves.
So Adaila, 46 wins, 20 losses, 15 draws across all comps. Of course, they won MLS Cup and he stripped down and did the push-ups and he had the iconic moment. And we all enjoyed it so much, as did NYCFC fans who are a little bit, some shell-shocked this morning. Semifinals of the Champions League this year. You know, almost got there. You figured if Dyla was going to leave, and I would argue it was inevitable. I mean, that's any manager. But Dyla's track record here, like, it's not like he's going to be a 10-year guy. You know, he was at Celtic for a couple of years, got what he needed out of Celtic. You know, he moved on after that, and he went to Valaranga. Then he came to New York City. Now he goes to Standard Liège. You also have to say, and you look at NYCFC, Crystal Palace, Galatasaray, and Standard Liège. Those are the jobs that their former managers, in terms of Vieira, Dome, and now Dyla, are all sitting in. Those are pretty good jobs.
Yeah.
And those are pretty good jumps. And if you're a manager around the world or a manager within MLS, you got to be looking at those and saying, oh, I would like to be there. That's not a stepping stone just for players. It's a stepping stone for managers as well. To me, NYCFC seems like a club, whether it be players or managers at the point, that's not the crux. Like, the crux is the organization. The crux is, and we just keep saying what, you know, we heard from Garth, like the algorithm, like what's it spit out? Who's the right man for the job? Who can take the project and hold on to it for a couple of years and move it forward? And there's no doubt that Dyla did that. This is going to be an attractive job. And I think Nick Cushing sounds like he's going to get every opportunity to get it. Like, he's going to be the interim. And it sounds like for the rest of the year, I know that he and Vartusian, the goalkeeper coach that's been there since Jason Kreis, and Mehdi Bellucci, who we had on a watch along recently, by the way, from Morocco, just to sell those even further, they all signed contract extensions as part of this. Efren Juarez is going to follow Dyla to Standard Liège. That was the other assistant coach. But it seems like they'll give him an opportunity from within, and he was the head coach for, I think, 7 years of the Man City women. So he is very well known within the organization, and he has a squad that seems pretty prime just to, like, keep it moving. Kaylin, when you see this news, what's it say to you? What's next for NYCFC?
I think it's pretty impressive that if you were to go across MLS and you were to take any team that had just won MLS Cup the year prior and you were to take their manager out of that team, I think you'd be really concerned or ask questions to say that this is a team that's maybe now going to be in trouble. And it just shows how NYCFC, I think, have done things a little bit differently. Where they have continued to find success, even bringing over managers, even if it's the idea is for them not to stay for the long haul. And I think we were talking about this a little bit beforehand of when we generally see the successful franchises in history, we've seen like coaches stay for a long time. We look at Seattle, we look at Toronto for that period of time. And then when we've seen them change a lot, it's really kind of like Atlanta, where that turnover really hasn't resulted in continuing that same sort of model of success, where NYCFC have consistently been able to stay at or near the top of the Eastern Conference. And then finally, I think through Dyla, get over the hump to win MLS Cup. So I just find that really interesting from the standpoint of like how we think of MLS and how we think of managers, and continuity seems so key to success. Whereas NYCFC have built this model where it's like, even the players, right? Like all the roster turnover that they've had as far as bringing in new guys, moving on old guys. And yeah, they, not old guys, but young players mostly. And that's kind of how they've built their team. So I actually think I would be pretty shocked if they didn't have another manager in waiting, maybe out from outside, just because I think the job from seeing the success of where these managers have gone on to, I think that's too exciting a prospect for somebody in Europe to want to come over and be a part of for themselves. So I would be sort of surprised if they do stick with Cushing, but we'll see. I mean, I think either way, I'm more impressed with the fact that they're probably going to continue on moving forward and still have a chance towards achieving some really big things this season.
But the other thing I would say, and you might be right about Cushing, I'm just sort of speculating given his time in the organization and the fact that he was a head coach. Maybe he's sort of making a move, you know, across the men's and women's games a little bit, like, you know, a little bit like John Herdman, like trying to get the head coaching job there to do that. But he has a long-term contract. Mehdi has a long-term contract. Rob Vartusian has a long-term contract and has been there under multiple managers. Whatever manager comes in is not going to be able to bring his whole staff. Like, and that goes back to the foundation that they're laying. It's like the manager is not sort of the end-all, be-all, shining light. You get to dictate. Everything is built around your vision. It's just sort of like the current leader of the first team squad, and they have the rest of the system up and running and churning around them. Dave and I were going back and forth in the pre-show meeting, and I had argued that MLS, we've become accustomed to your point, Kalen, of like seeing guys stick around, and that like continuity, especially when a successful team happens, is something we just expect. If you're good, your manager stays. Peter Vermees in Kansas City, you know, Siggy with Seattle, and then Schmetzer, Jim Curtin you see now with the Union in that sense. You know, for all those years in LA, you have Bruce that's just sort of like the ever-present. Dom Kinnear, to throw it to one in the past for you, Kalen, who's just like, okay, well, he's the dude. Like, he's not going anywhere. There's no question. This is Dom's team, and you keep building. I actually went back and just looked right now. Ronnie Dial is actually the 12th, like, longest tenure in MLS right now after being hired January 6, 2020. There are only five coaches in the league that were hired in 2018 or earlier. Do you guys know who the five are?
Five from 2018 or earlier.
Peter Adrian Vermees.
Heath.
Yep, ding, ding.
Curtin.
Adrian Heath, Curtin.
Heath, yep. One more. A guy who's been to multiple finals, has won an MLS Cup in that span, I think.
Caleb Porter.
Oh,
yeah, Caleb Porter, almost. Savarese. Oh. Yeah.
No, Gio. Yeah.
So those are the five. But we've seen a ton of turnover otherwise. So you're looking at the rest. Every other coach in the league is.
He has not won an MLS
Cup
final.
January 1st, 2019. Yeah, no, yeah. I got it right.
MLS is back.
It was Caleb. I was misremembering when exactly.
Whoa, yeah, where'd you get that?
That's a trophy.
There's a big box of them at the office, man.
A big box of them.
Get out of here. Come on. We should be bootlegging those. Like, what are we doing here? We should be selling those on a street corner somewhere. So I guess let's open this conversation a little bit wider, and we can go into NYCFC more. But I think one of the things we were speculating about is sort of the difference between a Ronnie Dial coming to MLS, winning, and having other opportunities, and MLS managers. And Doyle, you basically said something along the line of, if you offered all but like two or three guys in MLS the standard Liège job as MLS managers, they probably take it.
Yeah.
Like, so when we talk about the balance between American managers or Canadian and foreign managers, what are we talking about, and how does the Dial situation sort of illustrate some of the differences in opportunity?
I just don't think that there's a pipeline for American managers yet. Right? Like, Jim Curtin's not getting offered this job. Brian Schmetzer's not getting offered this job. Though Brian Schmetzer is one of the two or three guys who I think would turn it down and stick where he is. And, you know, that's going to take a while for American managers to build. And it's important, why it's important what Jesse Marsh is doing, you know, with Leeds. And it'll probably be another decade or maybe even two before it's just natural to consider guys who are doing well in MLS, who are American or Canadian, for these types of jobs. It's fine. You know, I'm like, it doesn't upset me at all. It's just the way it goes. And that's one aspect of it. The reason why almost anyone in MLS would take this job is because, just historically, Standard Liège, they've struggled over the past decade, and they've been just like churning through managers, but they have a new ownership group. The American ownership group, I think, bought them last month. So there's going to be a new capital investment. Even on top of that, they're like $50 million in the black in the transfer market over the past like 4 or 5 years. So they've done good work, even as they haven't had teams that are championship level. But historically speaking, they're a team that's always in the Champions League or Europa League. It's like the springboard. If you want to get to the Bundesliga job or a job in Ligue 1, like, Standard Liège should be pretty good. If, however, Ronnie Dial fails, what's the worst that happens? If Ronnie Dial is a free agent again 18 months from now, he gets a seven-figure offer from some team in MLS, and like he walks right back into this league, probably, you know, as one of the best paid managers in the league. So it's a no-brainer for him. It would be a no-brainer for almost any MLS manager to take this job. And honestly, I wish him luck. He did great work with this NYCFC team. They were probably my favorite team in the league to watch over the past couple of years with him in charge.
We talked about maybe not Nick Cushing. I'll put this to you, Dave and Kalen. If there was an American manager within the league that you would say, they're not making the choice, you're just saying, I think this person would fit in New York, who would it be, and what are the odds that NYCFC, if they hire someone under the Nick Cushing, would stay within the league as opposed to going outside of it?
You're saying a current coach at a different club?
Yeah, yeah, just for speculation's sake. You could ignore that if you want. If you don't think that's
ignore kosher. That. Talk about what we're going to see with Cushing. I'm curious to know what you think is going to happen, especially given your perspective on, you know, Armas taking over for Jesse Marsh in the middle of 2018.
You talking to me?
Yeah, I'm talking to you, David.
Again, he can't be held responsible.
No, I can't. My assumption is we'll see exactly the same, right? The entire point is a continuation of what's been successful. What, 7 straight shutouts, 5 straight shutouts, highest scoring team over a small 5 games that we've almost ever seen in Major League Soccer. My guess would be the point is that this coaching staff is capable, with 3 of their assistants remaining, of keeping this system running exactly how it works. You'll have to replace Tati. We've had arguments about that already, though, of how you do it. But I would be shocked if we saw any big changes to what NYCFC is. And I think that's sort of the point of it. We've talked about the assistants. You also have to talk about David Lee with all that, right? That's the point of having a sporting director that you entrust with the ethos of your club, is so you can move managers in and out, which is a bit more of a volatile position, and remain. So that would be my guess to Weeby's question. I don't have any names. There is a list of names I sort of put together when the DC job opened up of like next people who deserve a job. But I guess I'd be surprised if NYCFC gave a Danny Cruz or a Pa Motuka or someone like that this opportunity, just because of the size of the club and the success they've had in recruiting managers from around the world.
I guess that was sort of my point, is that I think NYCFC will go outside. It's been the track record that worked for them. It's a desirable job.
Yeah, if there was a Greg Vanney out there.
And there's nobody blindingly obvious that you would say, like, okay, that guy.
Would be probably Wilfred Nancy if you were to say, as NYCFC, we can give you more resources. But it feels like Nancy's pretty well connected to what he's built in Montreal. He's connected to the young players he's bringing through. So I wouldn't, that would be me speculating. But if you were asking for a name like that, he would be like the one that would stand out. So
I made the point with Atlanta earlier, because things got so bad that they decided they needed a manager with domestic experience. That was not their original model, right? They were doing the exact same thing as far as going abroad, finding big name managers or, you know, very experienced managers to come in and find success, and things didn't work out. And I think that was where they were like, you know what, we should really change course here. Whereas everything's working at Man City. Yeah, everything's working at Man City too. Everything's working at City Football Group. And so I would not expect them to change. I think Cushing could do fine. I agree that they'll probably continue with the system. My only thought is just there might be some internal pressure of just other like big name coaches or well-established coaches abroad that are within their sort of scouting network. And they kind of use that as a way to kind of like bring you here and then move you on. Similarly, like the way they kind of treat players in a way is just kind of like passing along. And I think they have the experience as well. And the one thing I think they've gotten right is that they've had a bunch of within the staff, always they've had player or former players like Mehdi or guys that understand the domestic league and the system and the players, and have been able to kind of like work. Even if you look at Mehdi's trajectory, like coming up from coaching the academy, then moving up to the first team, like there seems to be a plan in place to kind of cover all those different.
Can I throw out a random speculation, fun one? If Cushing has the job for the rest of the year, and in, you know, December 5th of 2022, there's a chance Greg Berhalter doesn't have anything to do, and Luchi Gonzalez and Anthony Hudson. But I would say, what's Greg going to do if he doesn't stick on with the U.S.?
Yeah, well, I mean, look, that's kind of what I was saying about what MLS managers could be ones that could go there. Because if you look at a jumping off point for American or Canadian managers out of MLS, it's come from, you know, it's like Jesse. That's right. It's like Jesse. You know, So you maybe need to be in a situation where you can create connections and, you know, create relationships and people that'll vouch for you that have more credibility in Europe, if that is indeed where you want to go. And like we sometimes talk like in a different league, what might happen, or a different world, you know, if Jim Curtin wasn't a Philly guy, like through the core of his heart, and, you know, hadn't, like, would that be the sort of thing? And
how about,
and maybe,
John Herdman?
You know, I don't know, 20 years where they look and say, oh, or like a Nico Estevez even, who has European experience, where they're like, that would be a good place for me to go. You know, they got paid, NYCFC got a paid a transfer fee from Standard Liège. We haven't seen that in MLS, but I don't know, maybe there's a future in which that actually exists. Anders wants to talk about the team on the field. I just don't think it's, I mean, with you, Dave, I don't think it's going to change that much. You know, Tati was always going to be sold. They surely have a plan to replace him if and when $50 million is ponied up via fax or WhatsApp or however they do that these days. You know, the core stays the same. The show goes on. Like, this is still, by every indication, in my opinion, arguably, if not the best team in the league, one of the two or three best teams in the league. One of the teams that should be looking at this season saying, we could win a double. We could win the Shield and we could win Cup. Period. We have the talent. We have the institutional knowledge. Let's try to go do it. Any final thoughts on NYCFC? Ronnie Dyla?
No, but I'll make Anders' life even worse. It is interesting because I think Doyle's point was right, which was this is a jumping off point for Dyla as an opportunity, and most MLS managers would take it. This was the same for players 6-7 years ago. Players no longer out of MLS have to do that, right? Now they're getting signed to the Premier League, the Bundesliga, Liga, and stuff like that. So I wonder how long it takes for managers to be that way. Like, I wonder how far away we are from Ronnie Dyla just getting that opportunity because he won with NYCFC. For Robin Fraser to be in conversations at a higher level than Belgium because he's been successful. I'm not saying we're there yet, and we might never get there, but I would have said the same about the player situation a few years ago, and now Kevin Paredes goes straight into a Bundesliga team, and Tati is probably going to the Premier League, etc.
We'll see what happens. All right, let's talk about two of the old heads in MLS managerial-wise. Sporting Kansas City, New England Revolution. Bruce in town here. It was a humid, hot KC June day. They had the water breaks going. Charlie Davies texted me before this game started. He said, final score, Revs 2, Kansas City 1. I ignored him till the final whistle, and then he just sent me eyeball emojis. So, Charlie all over this one. Peter Vries not happy about some of the refereeing. That's not that strange. There are some reports about who Sporting might be signing, which we'll talk about. But this is the question that was posed in the rundown, Doyle, and we'll let you kick this off. Which team do you have more faith in to turn things around, the Revs or Sporting Kansas City? To me, it's blindingly obvious, but I'm wondering if you see the same thing.
Yeah, I think everybody believes it's the Revs, and I would argue that the Revs kind of have turned things around. They've lost once in the last 2 months. So they're 4 wins, 1 loss, 3 draws in the last 2 months. Two of those draws were bad, right? The draw at home against Columbus when Eric Hurtado gets goal side of Omar Gonzalez for the late equalizer, and then another Omar error down at Philadelphia. Which led to, you know, the Aura got the goal for the 1-1 draw. But, like, the Revs have been playing better. They're not an absolute juggernaut, but they're tough to beat again, finally. They're scoring goals, whether or not they have Buxa out there. Even when they don't play great, they're finding a way to at least get a result. And then that was the case in this one. Like, they were not particularly good in this game, and I question long-term whether they can play with a front three with Gustavo Bo at the nine, and like Jozy Altidore is not the answer there. Like he does not look like he can lead a line in MLS anymore. So there are questions, but like they've already gotten out of that death spiral they were in. Like since that 4-game losing streak, which was coincided with their CCL run and exit, 4 wins, 1 loss, 3 draws. They keep playing like that. They're a top four team in the East, 4 or 5 team in the Eastern Conference. They're a dangerous team in the playoffs that nobody wants to play against. They already have turned their season around. Now it's about optimizing to try to figure out just how high they can climb and if they can be a threat again come playoff time.
When you have Carlos Heel and now Gustavo Bo back and the level of talent in other places on the field that the Revs have versus the injury-ridden, like, husk of a roster that Sporting Kansas City seems to be forced to run out there. I mean, I cannot see an easy path for Kansas City. There is a talent-based precedent path, Dylan Barrero improvement path, you know, possible number nine in the summer, DP path. I mean, that's what Taylor Twellman said, and Bruce was like, I don't know what he's talking about. But that may yet turn out to be a false flag from Bruce.
Bruce was in the middle of telling Peter Vermees that the best bagels come from Long Island, not from New Jersey. That's what they were fighting about on the sideline.
You think
100%.
So? 100%. Was that a fight?
Or pizza. Bruce is a pizza guy, so it could be pizza.
Yeah, okay. Peter's from South Jersey. Do people from South Jersey think that they actually have good bagels? I think people from South Jersey understand that you're just dumb.
Yeah, I've never been to South Jersey, you know, so I wouldn't know.
Okay.
Anyway, to that reference, if people aren't getting it, during halftime of the match on ABC, Taylor mentioned that the Revs are going to 100% sign a DP9. That was asked to then Bruce afterwards, and he said, no, how would he possibly know that? That is not an accurate statement. Again, Bruce has often responded in similar fashion to things that turn out to be true, but I guess we'll wait and see on that one. Kalen, what did you see from that situation, the nine situation for the Revs in this match? Because, you know, obviously Books are gone. We said it's good business, but still a big question mark as to their trophy window and their ceiling. Gustavo Bo comes in, gets a goal, looks pretty good. We haven't seen a ton of him, but we know he has plenty in MLS. And then Dylan Barrero, I think, like, your first scouting report on him would be nice to hear as well.
Yeah, well, it's good to get, especially if one player leaves, I think, for Gustavo Bo to start off with a goal. And he took it quite well, even though the defending on that was not great. But it was a nice ball there from Barrero as well, who I thought looked good. I thought Taylor on the broadcast was talking about just him giving a little bit of a different look to their offense. One thing that I feel like they've lacked a little bit has been some kind of like pace and energy and somebody that can kind of stretch the field or be dangerous since Tajon Buchanan left. And he looked to bring that. You know, the little scoop pass over the top, like I mentioned, not great defending, but shows a little bit of something that he has to be able to kind of, you know, really just try that. And it worked out in that case. So I think like a little bit of energy, I think New England was lacking a little bit of a new piece and some energy with all the pieces that they've lost. So I think if they go out and get more player, I think he's just 20 years old too. So young guy that I think they'll be able to have for a little while that already seems to be bearing fruit as far as being able to come in and make a difference. And then if you think they go out and get a couple more pieces, whatever ends up happening, I think they will end up doing that. But Gustavo Bo, I think, can do it. I think he at his best, when we've seen him at his best, he is like a, I think he's a goal scorer, right? He's just he's sniff. He's not afraid to shoot. I think he worked better in a two striker formation. So that's where you would think a second guy might come in because he does tend to kind of like drift and like leave the center of the pitch. Whereas, Buxa seemed more content to kind of like hold up in the middle, get in the box and do his business. So, I could see them finding out somebody more along the lines of, Buxa if they go out into the market and try and get like more of a hold up guy that's going to bang in the box.
Mike Kennedy asked, will the Revs stick with a lone striker formation or pair Bo with Altidore or Justin Renix? What do you think they do, Dave?
I would say, so to me, and I apologize if Doyle already mentioned this, but the key to this turnaround has been giving a partner to Matt Polster. And then they've actually won games without Polster, which would have been a miracle last year. And so to me, the 2-3-1 is important, not because of the center forward, but because of the two at the base of midfield. And it's been Tommy McNamara more than I would like. It's just not the right role for him. And I think we saw that in the playoffs last year when Bruce's fix at halftime against NYC was to pull McNamara closer, Polster, which wasn't a fit. But we've seen Captoon a couple times. We've seen Maciel a couple times as well. So I think that's a necessity for the Revs to be able to create the platform for Heal and Legette and Bo and maybe Josie to win them games. I think back to the Cincinnati game a few weeks ago, they were the second best team, but they won 3-2 because Legette scores a bicycle kick. McNamara scores a stunner. They have match winners in their team. Barrero's another one, but they weren't able to keep teams out and be stable enough.
So wait, are you saying that if you were Bruce, you would spend a DP slot on a central midfielder?
Maybe. I think Maciel and Kaptoum with Polster is enough. You just, they need to be on the field. And I would say that, therefore, Gustavo Boe is my center forward because I'm not playing as many attacking pieces across that front three to allow those two players to be out there together.
So then what do you do with the DP slot?
I have no idea. I guess my...
Can I just point out that Kyle Larin's available on a free?
Yes.
And the Revs have just banked $24 million in transfer fee money over the past couple of years?
And whatever position it is, your hope would be that it is someone a little younger for long term. If you are like I feel, which is they could win MLS Cup with this group right here, I would want it to be someone who's not entering their 30s to win now, but someone who potentially can be with you for a little longer than Gustavo Boe is, or is a longer term replacement for Tejan Buchanan.
We'll have to see what the Revs do. Big win for them. Wait on Emma Boateng. They got Emma. They don't need goal scoring. They don't need creative. New from anyone else. How about this?
I love Emma.
He's not getting astray. His production's actually been, if you go look at his production with the Revs, it's actually
well,
been
he
like,
is getting astray because
great signing from
it
Bruce.
Is Ema. We've gone over this, Weeby. It's Ema Boateng. So he did get astray.
No, I've been called out. Not intentionally. It was supposed to be complimentary because he's been really good with the Revs so far. Twelman says these guys are coming to Kansas City, but we don't have confirmation from Peter Vermees. He's not commenting on transfers. That was at least from the article he had with Charlie Bowman in La Soccer, which was very good. Eric Tommy, a left-sided attacking midfielder who's been with Stuttgart, I believe, but on loan a ton. And then William Agada from, I believe, Beitar Jerusalem.
Hapoel,
Nigerian.
Very different teams.
Hapoel, sorry. Yeah, that is a very...
Hapoel!
Yeah, the vibe check, quite different between those two teams. Those... one signing seems like a guy that you're preparing for perhaps the exit of one Daniel Shallowy, who's, I think, returning from action with Hungary where he didn't play. And the other would be sort of a young center forward project, which part of preparing for, I would assume, at some point here, either the exit of Alan Pulido or continued absence.
So then what was the signing of Johnny's, if that's what Eric Tommy is?
Johnny's has not been playing as much as it seems like he should be playing.
And he is a winger.
Given the state of the season and the talent level. Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. I'm still confused. I'll just read this quote from Peter and we'll keep it rolling, I guess. I'm getting a chance to experience something I've never experienced before in my career and the rest of the staffs. It's incredibly challenging. It's forcing us to have to come up with solutions that I don't think I would have ever faced. We're trying to deal with it head on. And I think it's sometimes we've done a really good job and other times we've just had to do what we can based on what we have available to us. So maybe what they have available changes, because when we talk about who's going to be turning around between the Revs and Kansas City, I mean, Polito's out. Gadi Kinda's out. If Daniel Shalvey's not there, they don't have a replacement. They just don't have the squad depth and the quality to survive those sorts of absences and keep it moving. But Charlotte FC, they got home for him like nobody else. Kansas City couldn't do it. Charlotte's just doing it over and over. 2-0 against the Red Bulls. See you, Miguel Angel Ramirez. Welcome, Christian Latanzio. Same old at home. Big win. Red Bulls can't do it on the road. That's a surprise. Charlotte Doyle. Is this a new coach bump, new manager bump? Did anything change, or is this just New York kind of getting worked? Because, you know, by the eye test, they got worked, and I thought Charlotte just had some actually pretty good finishing opportunities that they sort of fluffed.
Yeah.
And the XG showed that as well, but this is the Derek Jones game as well, so we can all be happy about that.
Big Derek Jones fans. I always have been. I just thought that Charlotte played with more commitment, and... Suze and her guest, whose name I'm blanking on, talked about it. Thank you. Ashley Mahoney talked about it on Today. You can see it from, you know, TT Ortiz in central midfield and the guys on the wings. They were more stuck in, and I hate to break it down to that, but they were just more stuck in and more willing to go out there and win the ball than the group had been under Miguel Angel Ramirez. And outside, like after you got through the first 10 minutes, it was pretty much all Charlotte in this one. And like, it feels like a new coach bump. But like the hope is that for Charlotte, it'll be something more substantial than that, so they could start turning this good home form into something on the road, because I think they have 2 points from a possible 21 on the road, or 1 point from a possible 21 on the road. So they need to start bringing that with them. But it was definitely a good first game for LaDantio.
Keenan Condor, if Doyle thinks that Charlotte only has 2 to 3 MLS quality starters, how does he make sense of Charlotte's decent run so far?
I mean, it's all been home games. We all know that home field advantage in MLS is substantially more than basically any other league in the world. But just look at it. Like, Mora, they had at left back, Shinishiki, Rios, Gaines, Walks in central defense, Bronico, D-mid. Like, none of these guys are starters throughout their
awful
career.
Awful at this age.
Or awful at this age is not a starter. Bender has been really good for a rookie. I don't think he starts on most teams. Titi Ortiz, I don't think he's a starter basically anywhere. He hasn't been a starter for Charlotte all year. Carujo has been decent. Kalina's been pretty good. So there's just not. As for how it works, it's home field advantage, and it's being compact and tough to break down. And if you could do that, especially in the first half of the season, you can win some games in MLS. But that tends to go away come July, August, in the stretch run. But we'll see. Maybe I'm wrong about this. Maybe a few of these guys have developed, and maybe a few of these guys that they've imported are better than they've looked so far.
I like Bender. I think he's been really good. When I went there in preseason, there was a lot of talk about him, and just I think the coaching staff really liked him. And I watched training. He looked good. He looked very clean on the ball. But I think he's shown a little bit more and is actually getting better as the season's going on. Just some of his like passing, like the speed of the game, the way he reads it, he takes it his chance really well. He gets in that like little soft spot. Left-footed, it takes a little deflection, but I think the way he was able to kind of like control and turn on that was really nice. And so I think he is that we picked kind of like who's going to be our 22 under 22. And I think also around some of the like whatever extra time rookie of the year. And sometimes, to Doyle's point, it does go to what club you go to, and especially for young players, who's going to give you some minutes. But he's taking them really well and looks like a pretty darn good prospect as the season goes on. That it'll have to see if you hit a wall at a certain point, but I feel like he's getting stronger actually at this point in the season. He's taking his chance as well.
I think there's something to like the way that the roster was and some of the moves they've made since then, whether it be Shinishiki or Rios, who I thought were both pretty good in this game, of sort of just finding better baseline players, like floor players. And Shinishiki's ceiling, it might rise, but the dude is over 90 minutes. He's going to give you something. He's going to get a couple chances. You saw him on the Derek Jones goal. And then you're seeing guys like TT and Ruiz get a little more opportunity as well. I'm curious to see what LaDantio changes, especially personnel-wise. And then what happens when the two Polish, top-end talents that they signed come back into the team. Can they extend something to the road? Can they keep the home form going? I mean, there's big questions here, and they could answer them in the affirmative, and especially if they do something semi-big in the summer
window. Bigger is the Ecuadorian group that was out for this game, because while they got the win with Brant Bronico starting at D-mid, like, that's where the weakness is. I feel like Swadowski has performed, although not more recently, and Joswiak's new, but if LaDantio can sort of activate what is, an Ecuadorian World Cup, it feels like, starter potentially, as well as a young DP or an under 22 initiative signing in that central midfield, that could be a strength for them that they just haven't used in any way so far to start this season.
Big win. 2-0. John Youngblood does ask, how does Charlotte FC's home atmosphere rank in MLS? So Dave, you've been there. You got a little taste, Kalen, but I don't think you've experienced it in person. Where do you see it? How do you see it? How do you feel it?
It's up there. It's downtown stadium. You walk to the stadium. It's packed all around. Everyone around the city is wearing the colors. So it has that like excitement in the market on a game day that not every MLS city has. And then inside the stadium, I was at that first game, so you don't totally have the flow of the chants yet and the fans. But I think everything we've seen on TV over the last few weeks, it's gotten there. Like, it felt like that. in the Vancouver game, the last game, and now this Red Bull game. Every half chance, you can sort of feel the energy.
All right. Should we talk Nashville-San Jose? Nil-nil? That's a home draw for Nashville. It is across conferences. I don't know. It has some bonus game vibes.
No. Those, it has zero bonus game vibes.
Just threw it out for the banter.
Okay.
Well, just threw it. I'm wearing the Austin. You can't tell. It's hard to tell. I'm wearing two the Austin.
Wins. The big story here is 2 wins from 5 at home for Nashville. And we've said the same thing about them basically every week, which is like they're a really solid team. If they get out in transition, they're very good. If Hany Mukhtar in particular gets out in transition, they're very good. But if you force them to carry the game, they don't have enough match winners. And that's what San Jose actually came out and played. They're doing that kind of the same thing under Alex Covello that they did under Matias Almeida. But JC Marcinkowski had a good game. And there was nobody besides Hany to make a special play for Nashville. And it feels like we're just going to keep saying that all year about this Nashville team who have not taken a step forward from last season.
Which brings us to the out-of-contract MLS matchmaker segment that was promised and then drawn backwards. But we will do it now. These are a list of names that Tom Boger, Tommy Scoops, went out and reported, figured out. Sometimes, you know, MLS salaries can be a little opaque, the length of the deals, so that's getting better these days. But these guys are out of contract, and I believe all would be eligible for MLS free agency. So they could choose their destination. Let's take a crack at maybe trying to predict where they could go or where it would just be fun for them to go. Let's start with Alejandro Pozuelo, a former MLS MVP, 30-year-old number 10 in Toronto. Injuries have hampered him a bit or more than a bit over the last couple seasons. Maybe he doesn't want to stick around. Maybe he's not part of Bob Bradley's project. Whatever it might be, what's a good landing spot for Alejandro Pozuelo?
I'll say Colorado. I think if you're a team like Colorado and there's players like this who someone has already paid an extensive transfer fee to bring into this league and they're willing to stay and you can upgrade your team. We saw them do it with Brian Acosta, obviously at a lower level. Like, this is a piece that changes what the ceiling of your team can be. And obviously a little bit of familiarity for Robin Fraser with the process that brought him to MLS. So that would be my ideal setting.
To me, it's Nashville. It's the team we were just talking about, because I think Hany's at his best as a second forward in a 3-4-1-2, right? Like, you could play Hany in that spot with a true playmaker underneath him. And Pozuelo is obviously that. It would require Nashville to do something creative in terms of shipping out Ake Loba, figuring out how to get out from under his DP deal, but that it seems pretty clear at this point that one's not going to work out. But like that, boy, that one is hand in glove to me, because Pozuelo can play on the break with the way he can spray the ball around. He's amazing at starting the break, but what he's best at is in possession, being a team who can unlock an opposing defense. And that would allow Hany to play off the ball. It would allow CJ to do more goal scoring stuff and less hold up and link play stuff. And it's just like, it addresses the biggest weakness in this team. And I think it makes them, turns them from a team with like a, 52, 54 point ceiling to a team with a 60, 63 point ceiling, something like that. So that, like, Pozuelo to Nashville would make a ton of sense.
It also fits for him to have actual D meds around him that will cover for him.
Right, right. Good point. Really good point. Because, like, they are loaded with guys who just, they will do the work. They will absolutely do the work.
Yeah, he won't be carrying any water.
I could also see Portland being a place for him.
Yeah.
If you think of just like, lacking a little bit. I know Santiago Moreno's, emerged some, but really having that guy since Valeri, to have somebody that can like score goals, set up play, find Yumi Chara, like sort of facilitate, and then you're going to have some protection with Chara and Williamson around him. So I could see that fitting their style of play, the way they want to kind of have the ball, and I could see him being pretty dangerous.
They do have three DPs, but they're one of those black boxes where they have not announced a lot of the length of most of the contracts on the team.
do you think he would have to be on a DP?
Osuelo?
Like, what if the
isn't he making like $7.5 million?
Well, that's what I'm saying. Well, maybe,
but he's making a lot. He would
maybe he's looking for a old coach that got the best out of him. Maybe he's looking to live in a sunny place on the coast. Maybe he's looking to go to the Galaxy, who could desperately use a number 10 in that same mold. And yes, have their DP spots accounted for, but maybe they can find a way out of Douglas Costa, and then they don't.
That's a good shout, Weeby.
That feels to me. I thought that was the one. I thought that's the one that you would all just like. You know, everybody's fighting to get in on the Galaxy. I thought that was the no-brainer. Like, you got Victor Vasquez. You just follow Victor in, man. Victor's probably on a short-term deal. He's telling you, this is great here. Like, Chicharito's here. Jovalich. Like, you got... Yeah, you could make these wingers sing, dude. Like, if anybody can do it, Alejandro, it's you. And you get back to be with Greg.
Yeah, I don't think...
Manhattan Beach.
I don't think the issue for Pozuelo is he thinks he can or cannot be successful there. I think the issue is...
No, I know.
That they can't sign just him.
Making a sell on old relationships. The Galaxy would be a fascinating one to me. And if you're looking for a team to really rise high with that signing, I think they could be one. How about this? Stay in Toronto. Jonathan Osorio. It's crazy to me, Dave, to think about Oso anywhere but in the six, Brampton adjacent. But he's out of contract, and they're in the middle of sort of a...
I'm going to say it. Sell Georgi Mihailovic, sign Oso to play that spot as a free agent.
Woo! That's some good spice.
Is that not the most obvious thing to do?
Do you think he'd do it?
I mean, if Figo signed with Real Madrid,
I think Oso feels like he's earned a place. And we saw it with the last contract, right? He waited up until the last minute to get the deal he thought he deserved. He's obviously, it feels like he's like one contract behind because of the perception of domestic players when he finally broke through and where TFC stood. I think he's at a place where he's going to get the offer he wants wherever it is, whether it's in Europe or Montreal.
He wants the Rodon. The Roldan.
Yeah, and he's earned it and he deserves it. I think that's an awesome one. The other one I thought of was RSL. It feels like with the Savarino move, like maybe they're going to be a little safe with guys who have proven success in MLS. And he could be the 10 behind a Bobby. He could play the Demir Krylak role, which we don't know if he'll ever play again. But he can also be flexible and play out wide or play deeper, as we've seen with Canada and TFC. So I thought that would be one where it'd be – they have money to play with, but this is a safer gamble than just an overseas DP.
DC like United is another leave. One, right? So go ahead, Galen. Sorry about
that. I just feel like he's going to leave. Like he's got the World Cup waiting. I think he's going to play at the World Cup. He's 29. He's played for his hometown club his whole life. Like now is the chance to really take that leap if you're going to do it ever. And feels like really good timing where you're on a free – you're, you know, in your prime, like go abroad, try it out, get paid. But I feel like him going to another MLS club just doesn't feel right in a way. I just feel like there's another challenge out there for him. So I would.
This is free agency MLS, Kalen. Welcome to the future.
Yeah. It's like you know, the intro video for him in Montreal has to be the interview he did of like how many trophies. Yeah.
At least TFC has MLS Cup and then just walks away.
Yeah, he's here to change this, baby. Let's
Thank
go.
You. What do you say? Let's he go. Says at the end.
Yeah,
Thank
that you. Could be good. Yeah, I mean, look, I even think a team like, you know, if you're just throwing out names, like a team like Charlotte, a team like even like a San Jose that's leaned back into like MLS experience, mm-hmm. I think that there's a place for him in a lot of different clubs in the league. I mean, the question is, what does Jonathan Osorio want to do?
What about St. Louis? Right.
You know, I just saw a rumor come through on Twitter about
Sonny Kittle.
HSVs. Yeah, they're number 10. That feels like a St. Louis signing through and through. Like two Bundesliga guys that's been crazy productive. I think 9 goals, 16 assists this year. Feels like their MO, but
they got to make sure that they have that core, that veteran MLS core. And if you can get Jonathan Osorio at this point in his career, like that is like, imagine how different Charlotte would be if they had Paul Arriola, if they'd been able to outbid Dallas and gotten Paul Hugely. Arriola.
And that's why I mentioned them, is just like maybe they learned a lesson. It seems like they had with going inside the league with others. But how about Aaron Long? That's a That's a conundrum, right? He'll be coming off a World Cup. He's had European interest before, and maybe the sort of regret side of like not being able to realize it. So, you know, just like also he might be thinking it's Europe for me. I'm going to go find the best destination I can to try to at least try that out in my career. But what if he stayed in MLS?
I would think one of the LA clubs.
Well, it can't be LAFC. They just gave it to him. Deal to Chiellini. They got like 9 center backs. Galaxy would make sense. To be clear, every single team would make sense, right? There's not a team in MLS that wouldn't be better with Aaron Long. The question is it a club that's going to give a DP deal to a center back? Is he going to be able to get that at this age coming off these injuries? I think Portland's an interesting one. The center back position has aged. Santiago Moreno has been good. There is some attack left. Do they like go all in on a guy like this to try and patch it together and make one more run under Gio?
What about an Austin?
Austin would make a lot of sense, I think. I'm not in love with their center backs. They've been better, but it's not great. San Jose would make a lot of sense. I don't think it'll be for a DP deal for Aaron Long. If he stays healthy and, you know, gets back to 100%, and he's close, like he's tracking well right now, I still don't think it'll be the kind of deal that Walker Zimmerman got. Zimmerman's a year or two younger. He's coming off of 2 straight Defender of the Year. You know, it's a different league. So I would imagine it would be like a high-level TAM for Aaron Long rather than an actual full-on DP deal.
I think it'd be DP. I think it'd have to be DP. Because I think he's got a real good line at starting in the World Cup. If you look at just in the past, like you get a bounce from that. Like Jay Demerick was a DP, came back. If you are a World Cup starting central defender, like you come back to the US.
Even Beasley at left.
Beasley,
back.
Like you get those DP deals come back. And I think it's interesting. The Walker Zimmerman deal, I think it's interesting to see if other clubs will follow suit, because that was a pretty big deal. And you know, I think we've seen in the past how clubs didn't really value Walker Zimmerman. From I understand maybe the LAFC deal from Dallas is a little bit different, but at least LAFC moving on from him and that not working out. If you think in the past of like Aiko Parra, it really hasn't been a position that has been valued at the DP level, but I think that may begin to change. So I don't like to disagree with Doyle often, but I think in this case, with him starting at the World Cup potentially or having a good line at that, I think he would be in line for that.
I also think the new MLS,
the technicality be here?
Just the new MLS is you only need one team to do it, right? Like that's what the free agency allows. That hasn't allowed, obviously, where I mean, Doyle, at least they're big basketball fans, where it's like, is this guy a max player? It doesn't matter, right? If someone, aka the Knicks or the Charlotte Hornets, is dumb enough, that player becomes a max player. So that's sort of where you're at. And I'm not saying that's the deal with Aaron Long, but you also start to get into bidding wars, right? Which is he the final piece for Austin FC? Well, is he also for the LA Galaxy? Now, all of a sudden, you need to one-up them.
I was going to say the modern MLS, and Demerit's obviously not in that. And I don't think DeMarcus was when he signed Houston. Correct if I'm wrong here, those that remember the beginning of the TAM era and the timing here more. But, like, Long could be a DP without the name tag, right? Mm-hmm. Like, you could sign him for quote-unquote a max contract. You could sign him for 1 point whatever, you know, kind of like Josie got signed for the Revs, and just buy it down. Like, he could still get his money in what you would previously have called a DP range and what would be, outside of Walker, sort of top of the heap among defenders in this league and still stick around. I don't know. If I'm like the Chicago Fire, I might be like scratching and clawing for Long. Just like, please.
Didn't Fire give Shiho some massive contract, though? Didn't they already spend a ton at center back?
It's on the TAM front. Like,
yeah, I think Chiellini is one of the highest.
If they sell Gaga, they might have a bunch of money to invest as well. Like, you'll have a bunch of allocation money. I don't know. We'll see.
CJ Brown also coached him at New York as well, so there's a relationship. Mm-hmm.
By the way, Portland would also be a return for him for a developmental days with Timbers too as well.
DP,
how about Daniel Schaule?
That he'd be the second to ever do it. Wando, you know, blazing the trail.
How about Daniel Schaule?
I mean, he's another one who would make sense for just about anybody.
You know that,
right? Anybody who plays with a front three, Daniel Schaule is is the right fit.
I've already stated him that he should go to Orlando like 5 times. So I'm already out there on that one.
I like Cincinnati. I could see him doing well there.
Do you think he would? Do you think he stays in MLS?
No.
Oh, really? You think he's going to leave?
I mean, yeah, he's in the prime of his career. He's a hungry international. He, you know, I'm surprised that
he's a hungry international. It's funny, Thor. Just sounds like he's hungry for it.
He didn't play this break.
He didn't play, but he's what? He's been capped 15.
He should play for Gerhard Schuber because he's a hungry international. He's a hungry young wolf.
I get you. He's a hungry young wolf. Yeah. I would be surprised if this wasn't his chance to test himself in Europe. Now, money can change that, right? If somebody offers him a significant deal in MLS that beats anything that he's seeing overseas, like then okay. And like I think teams should do that. If you look, the hit rate on DPs is not as good as it should be. If you're able to get Daniel,
there's bad hit rate on TAM.
But there's no way Daniel Chalet is staying as a TAM player.
Fair.
So if you can get him as a free agent with no transfer fee, you could pay him an extra, $400,000 a year, and it makes sense. Because there's a baseline expectation of performance that if he stays healthy, he's going to hit it. And he's in the prime of his career, and there's no adjustment to the league. So this is the super interesting one. As David said, Orlando City makes a ton of sense. So does everybody. Everybody makes sense for him.
Doyle, I'd prefer you not use numbers, just out of respect to former players. to just drop super casually, you could throw an extra 400,000.
You could throw in an extra used 2003 Acura.
Give me a warning or something. Send me a text to be like, the following content
please mute your headphones here for just a second, Caleb. Yeah. We'll be right back to you. You throw out thrown out teams because you're right. It's basically everybody. How about a Colorado Rapids? Like their wingers.
They are a team. Yes, they are a team.
I would not want them. I would not want them to spend big money on Daniel Chalet. I think that would.
Why?
Because he's inconsistent. He has the same issue they have. He struggles when teams are playing in a low block. It would be all the same problems with another player. He's better than Andre Shingashiki, but he's not going to change the ceiling, I think, for that team. If they're going to spend money, I'd want it to be on someone else.
How about the Crew?
Yeah, that one would fit better.
Definitely the Crew. Yeah,
I think the Crew would be an interesting one as well. All right, let's just keep it moving here. We have Jossie Zardes here, but I think sort of the smart money is on him resigning with the Rapids. So how about Latif Blessing?
I think Latif is a rotation player, except for one particular role that we saw for 2 years in LAFC, where he was amazing, playing that pressing 10, at the front of a midfield that is always in control, like weaponizing his field coverage, his ball winning ability, and his industry, and limiting. Like he can't beat anybody off the dribble. He's not a great passer. He doesn't strike the ball well. He's not a natural goal scorer. But this one particular role fit him perfectly. I think that I could see Jim Curtin using that well, except Philadelphia have a million different playmaking homegrown kids that they want to play that role. I'm not sure I don't think Bob Bradley is playing that type of system in Toronto, so I'm not sure he fits there.
I wonder about Houston, and they have pieces in central midfield, but as you said, a rotation. Right now it's him. I don't know what the future is for Darwin, but it's him, Vera, Ache, Seren, Coco, right? You can sort of use all of them, and you can play dual eights that push with Ache and him next to each other, or Coco and Ache next to each other. It probably is in a position of need, but I think he could fit well there. And as you're saying, I don't know that the market's going to be huge, so you might get a pretty good deal on him. The other thing that comes to mind is if San Jose doesn't re-sign Montero, but they're not ready to make a big splash at a position like that? Do you bring him in similar to Montero this year for a year or two to sort of cover the spot as you find your feet under a new manager?
How about this is a weird one. Could you see Latif potentially going back to Sporting Kansas City, but more in a different role where he plays in the middle of midfield? Like, I feel like when I watch Sporting Kansas City, they seem to struggle a lot with, like, just having mobility and, like, you know, different pieces, especially ball in the pressure. Middle of the pitch. And if you see him coming back into that system where, you know, there's some familiarity, but he was used almost as, like, a completely different player at the time. He was, like, a winger trying to beat guys one-on-one on the wings and just wasn't really suited to him. He's now found this new kind of lease on life and position. So I kind of feel like going back to Sporting might be an interesting one, more as like this different type of player and give some much needed energy to that middle and midfield. The other one that's interesting to me just for fun is NYCFC. I just think like with the way that they actually, it was the first time I ever saw Latif play center midfield was with LAFC at NYCFC on that small pitch, just buzzing about. And I was like, who is this player? And I wonder, like, I don't know if it would make sense based on the profile of play. You don't see NYCFC going off and going to the free agent market a ton with inter MLS moves, but that one also was interesting to me.
Last two, and we'll get out of here after a couple more topics. Sean John and Bill Hamid, could you see either of them leaving their current teams, where they've basically become legends? Bill as a homegrown over many years, and Sean as a guy that picked up through like what expansion draft and trade, but then has become just the dude for the blue side of New York.
Sean, I would say zero chance.
Same.
I don't know that DC has a replacement plan. They don't have a JT Marcinkowski or Gaga Slonina that they're trying to push through. But Hamid has. They've been better when Hamid's on the field. I don't know. Yeah, maybe he could move.
Oh, these are the questions we have to start asking ourselves. Free agency is here. Real quick, Taylor Twelman says either the Crew will sign a Mauro Manotas or maybe a Premier League striker. A TPT on who the Premier League striker is and the profile of that. But that's pretty vague. Sounds like a number nine obviously is coming to Columbus. We will find out when that happens. And then some news from Pablo Maurer here on Edison Flores, who I believe is on the bench today with Peru, which we got to get out of here to watch. DC probably going to move on. He's going to go back to Liga MX. And DC execs have apparently been in Italy working to find a replacement DP. They would have two spots open as well, by the way. And that would be a number nine, which sounds like they're going to sign in this window as well. Giorgio Chiellini officially signs for LAFC. Any big thoughts there? Just enjoyed they brought back the hat lift for Giorgio. He was...
It's a playoff signing. Everybody is focused on the wrong thing here, right? Like, where has LAFC consistently failed in the toughest stages of knockout tournaments? They've been the best regular season team in the league since 2018. Since 2018, and that's great. Like, they're going to keep being really, really good in the regular season. In the playoffs, though, they have not had the right kind of veteran savvy in the middle of that back line. And so they've gotten gashed, whether it's been, Tigres in the final or the Sounders seemingly every year in the playoffs. So I think the signing Chiellini is not about those dog days of August. Certainly not about making cross country flights for, an Eastern Conference game, on a random Wednesday. Like, they're going to use him selectively with an eye towards having him available for the playoffs, for the playoff push and then the playoffs themselves. And then in the playoffs, I think they're going to end up playing more of a lower block. And that's where Chiellini, man. Like, he's dominant in the air. He's a very good passer. And he's one of the best organizers we've seen in, the back line over the past quarter century. There aren't more than a handful of guys who you would take over him. So I think this makes sense as a targeted signing. And I said targeted specifically because they use TAM, not a DP slot. It makes sense as a targeted signing to try to get them over the top in the playoffs. I like it for that reason. I think it was smart from LAFC.
I agree with that. I was totally, at first I was like, what? No way. Like, I think Sky Sports asked me about this to begin with. And I was like, do you mean the Galaxy or you mean LAFC? Because it just doesn't really fit with what I know about LAFC, and it just totally like it was kind of dissonance. I just couldn't understand it. But the more and more you think about it, it makes sense. And sort of the other funny part of it is when you look at LAFC's moves over the last, you know, 6 to 8 months, they've gone out and gotten a bunch of guys, and I think been intentional about guys who had won trophies in MLS before, had experience playing internationally, or whether it's even Ilya winning the Open Cup. No disrespect, Open Cup, because I don't know, this is one of my proudest moments, but you know, Acosta, all these guys that they've gone out that have real experience as winners to kind of get over that edge. Now, this guy checks a couple more of those boxes as far as, you know, Champions League and all that good stuff. So I think, yeah, it makes sense. But I agree that I think it's for this reason, is to try and get over that hump.
Trying to get over it. Here's a hump for Minnesota United to get over here. Looks like Roman Metner is hurt again. Left hamstring. First game back was against SC Paderborn in a friendly on Saturday. Looks like he got hurt again. So that changes the ceiling for Minnesota United. We will see as they return to action what that means for them. Two pieces of news here. So Thursday, actually, we're going to know. It's a huge day in North American soccer. We're going to know who the host cities are for 2026. That's a big deal. And also today, it's not officially confirmed, but reports are coming out that the roster size for the World Cup is going to be 26 for official comps, that IFAB has made that official. And I believe the 5-sub rule is also going to hold as well. So those are two big deals. Doyle, can I just get your quick Jesus Ferreira take from the 5-0 against Grenada?
Yeah, I mean, 4 goals. It's a good game. I think it's pretty clear that Greg Berhalter rates him ahead of the other guys in the pool, whether it's guys like Haji Wright, who is there right now, or guys who weren't called in. And he's going to keep getting chances. And the thing is with Jesus Ferreira is that he finds those good chances no matter who he's playing against. Right? He found him against Morocco. He found him against Uruguay. He found him against Grenada. And on a long enough timeline, guys who find chances tend to start finishing their chances. And like that holds true no matter the level. Like if you are finding chances, you know, in the Premier League but not scoring them, there's like a 99% chance that you eventually start scoring them. I'm not the biggest Jesus Ferreira fan. There are two issues for me. Is like he just does not crash the net on rebounds. So he doesn't pick up those poacher's goals that I like to see. He has to change that. And the other thing is he doesn't draw any fouls. I think he's drawn 4 fouls all year in MLS. I think he's drawn 2 in his last 7 or 8 games for the national team. And for a team that's potentially as good on restarts as the U.S., that you're leaving something on the table there. So I'm not exactly a Jesus Ferreira true believer. Anytime you're finding the types of chances that he finds, and anytime you score 4 goals, it's gonna be tough to take you out of the lineup.
El Salvador, Tuesday night. You can do the live watch along with us on Twitch and YouTube. Rodney Wallace is going to be with us. He knows CONCACAF. Back to front, that should be a good time. Canada playing tonight. They ran over Curaçao 4-0. I think the big story here is just very clearly Alphonso Davies back and looking like Alphonso Davies and doing it in Vancouver. Seemed like a special night for him and the fans that were able to attend after all the back and forth and the canceled games and all the other stuff that went on with the CSA and the Canadian men's national team. And now the women as well, as it comes to negotiations, which are still not concluded or resolved. But in the Nations League, they'll keep playing. What would you be watching closely against Honduras, Dave?
I think how the back line set up. They were really good against Curaçao. That's not the opponent they're going to have. You're going to play Belgium in the first game of the World Cup. It's going to be 5 in the back. You're not going to let Steven Vitoria defend in space if you don't have to. Whether that's Adekube or Alistair Johnson as the third center back, that I could understand. Obviously, it wasn't that against Curaçao because it wasn't necessary. So you assume going on the road, it's a different type of test. Maybe you get to see that play out a little bit more. So that's the big one for me. Maybe Maxime Greth gets a start, but it's Milan Borjan's spot to hold at this point. I think a lot of the starting 11 is sort of solidified for John Herdman, which is a positive for a team that's going to have a weird and wacky road to the World Cup. They're not the only ones. That's the nature of this World Cup. I mean, Ecuador just found out that they're actually going. You know, like, it's bizarre across the board. We've never seen a Winter World Cup, so it's not an excuse for Canada. But I think to have this, to have the culture set, to have the group set, I think is a positive going forward.
Obviously, we're going to learn what Canadian cities host in 2026 as well. That's a big deal. We'll end it here, Kalen, with you on the fire, and then we'll probably just fill time for another half hour or so just to make sure we get Doyle out on time. Gago Slonina, could he go to Chelsea? Could he go to Madrid? What will he do? Justin Witt says Gaga to Chelsea is the only good news for the fire, as Shaqiri and Torres were injured during the international break. We had tough times for the fire when it comes to player health, but it looks like Gaga's going to go. Where should he go, Kalen? What do you think?
I don't know. If the tough part is Real Madrid and Chelsea sound like a dream. We talked about this before, but also neither of them have done a great job, it seems like, as far as like ushering players through their system to the first team. And that doesn't always seem like that's necessarily part of their plan. So that makes you a little bit cause for concern. I think as a former Fire player and supporter now, my hope would be just that this gets done as soon as possible, wherever it goes, because we saw the way that it, the national team thing seemed to affect Gaga and his performance. And it now seems a little more clear that there were other conversations like this happening, probably coinciding with that. So just to be able to kind of like put it behind you and be like, you know what, I have this move, you know, this part is already set, but I can go back to just kind of focusing on what's in front of me and get back to kind of like focusing on his development. But I don't know either. I mean, it sounds like he's going to have some pretty good options, but I don't know. It worries me a little bit with some of the way these big clubs are structured, but I don't know.
I agree with you. And I know that's the history. I would say for Real Madrid, I mean, Vinicius, Rodrigo, Odegaard, even though he doesn't play there, they're Casemiro as well a bit. They have, when they've bought players at this age, they have done okay actually producing and pushing them through to the first team. Goalkeeper is obviously a different position because you're not going to play 15 minutes at the end of the games and whatnot. But Real Madrid has gotten better at that. And if they're going to pay a significant transfer fee for him, I think there will be a proper plan. They do now have partnerships with other clubs that they've worked players through.
Yeah, the answer is Real Madrid. They've been better at working players through the system. And the only thing they've been better at is selling players. When there's demand for young players, Madrid have sold them. Chelsea have just kept guys on the loan army cycle for years and years and years and years. And I don't think that really helps them. Now, different owners with Chelsea, maybe a different perspective. We don't know. We do know that Real Madrid has kind of established themselves as a team that is willing to sell on young players with potential. Maybe there's a buyback clause, maybe there's not. And on top of that, it's Real Madrid.
Yeah,
it's Real Madrid. You choose the choice is between Real Madrid and Chelsea, especially because there's been no American breakthrough at Real Madrid. He'll be the first, right? You choose Real Madrid. I say that as someone who hates Real Madrid. Just for you, Dan Hayek, hate Real Madrid.
Doyle normally pro monarch as well as everything else that Real Madrid stands for.
Yeah. We end with the producing Anders reminder of the day brought to you by Matt Doyle and his schedule on this Monday. Nick asks, does Weeby's toddlers have favorite teams yet? They don't, but they understand good and bad teams. And my son's constantly asking when we watch games, who's the good team? So if you can tell me how to answer that question the most accurate way possible, holler at me. For now,
Weeby's raising front runners. That's what we.
That's
just
not
heard.
A good question Weeby's to ask as an runners. Aspiring MLS fan.
You should respond with parody.
Exactly. They're all good and they're all bad, son. Okay, that's the way this works. All right, we're out of here. Thanks for tuning in, listening. I'm sure every listener, Doyle, got to this point. There's not a single person that dropped off early, and we appreciate everyone for that. 401-206-0MLS, extra time at MLSsoccer.com, or hit us up on Twitter. It's the best way. Enjoy your week. Enjoy the watch-alongs. Canada on Monday night, US El Salvador on Tuesday. We will see you Thursday. Adios.